It's Angela Stevens with the podcast Refocus with Angela. And I am so excited because I have a guest today that I think has more energy than I do. He is a high octane speaker and he is a fabulous magician. And you probably know him. You may have seen him, but his name is Tom Piché. And Tom, thank you so much for joining us today.
Angela, thank you so much. It is an honor to be here. So excited.
You're so welcome. So first of all, this podcast is all about focusing and how you focus, right? So how long have you been doing magic and being a magician? I mean, when did that all start?
I was probably 11 years old. It started from my cousin, Rich Albano, who was a magician in New Jersey, and seeing what he did at family parties. And whenever we got together, it kind of got that interest. It got me hooked. Now, this was before YouTube. This was before the internet. So I really devoured anything I could just in books and watching, you know, old VHS tapes. And one summer, about 11, 12 years old, we were in Boston with my family and saw my favorite type of magic, which was street magic, right there at Faneuil Hall. And I just remember it was like a switch. Seeing that was like, I have to do this. And we were lucky enough that there was a magic store right around the corner. Went in, bought a magic trick. They taught us how to do it and bought a catalog and was hooked ever since.
Wow, that's so cool. Do you ever get nervous when you go on stage?
Absolutely.
Do you? Okay. So how do you do it? I mean, how do you focus and how do you pull it together when, especially on those off days, how do you do it?
Well, first of all, I think it's healthy that you are nervous. For me, if I'm not, there are times when I feel so comfortable in what I'm doing that, you know, I'm more excited, or I call it nerve-sighted, as my daughters like to refer to it as. But having that little element of nerves, you know, makes me have a little gut check that I care, you know, and when I care that much, I always want to over-promise and over-deliver. So you want to make sure the stakes are high for yourself. And with me, that really is the checks and balances of that, is that there's a bit of that nearsighted energy that I bring with me to the stage. Now, I think the way you kind of combat that and get over that and use that to your advantage, use that as fuel, so to speak, is to be rehearsed. And what I do is both, you know, a combination of what I feed off the audience with extemporaneously, but also knowing where this is going to go and having a script and having a roadmap, and the old adage of, you know, preparation being really that best tool to use to feel you're most comfortable is what I depend on. So the more prepared I am, the roadmap that I have, that helps me get through it, and relying on past experiences, saying, hey, we've been here, right? We've done this. We've gotten through this, whether it's a difficult time or it's a really big event, that you know that you have that confidence to go into it with.
So that's right before, you know, when you're going on stage, right? And so have you ever been in a moment where you're in, you know, doing your set, you're on stage, it's going great, and then all of a sudden you freeze or you forget or something goes wrong? Has that ever happened to you? And if so, when you were right in the middle of that, you know, how did you handle that?
Yeah. When I was younger, you want to, you know, almost try to think of every out possible. And I think it's important to have what we call them as magicians, an out. So to think if something's going to go wrong, it will go wrong. And just about every trick and routine that I've done, there's been something that's gone wrong. So you try to think of what would I do in that situation to have that backup plan. But instead of trying to make it look as if it doesn't affect me and the audience knows something is kind of going on, you know, there's two ways to handle it. One is you just roll right past it and the audience doesn't notice it. Or if it's so overt, if something is so, you know, just not going your way, there are times when you have to just give that piece of vulnerability to show them that you're human and to just let the audience know, hey, you know what? I think we're gonna scrap this, or we might move on, and seeing that vulnerability is what allows them, I think, to appreciate you even more and fall in love with you even more. But we're always looking for material. It's like a comedian, you know, if something goes wrong, you try to make that into a positive. You try to find the humor, the joke, or just take it in a different direction. So the ability to be flexible, that's huge in any field, but as a magician, you have to anticipate that something unexpected is going to happen. But yeah, when it's really, really awful, sometimes you have to just chalk it up, be honest, show that vulnerability, and the audience loves you that much more for it.
They do. I always say, just talk to your audience, you know, just talk to them. When I get on stage, I'm the same way, because they actually feel like they can connect more with you as well in those times.
Exactly.
Is this industry for you, is being a magician, first of all, is it competitive?
You know, it is, but I never really look at it as that. I think that we have something in the world of magic, this camaraderie that is really unique. You know, I always talk to my wife about like other fields. If you were a wedding DJ, there's probably 10,000 wedding DJs in my own state.
Right.
When you look at professional magicians, you know, especially in what I do with corporate magic, I look up to so many and I get to work with such a great group of other corporate magicians through the company that I work with, which is called Magic Corp Productions. And we go out there to work solely with companies to bring that brand of magic or comedy or whatever we're doing to them. But I think it's important to create a base just like you would in any field of colleagues, people that you can work with, rely on. So I don't really look at it as competition. In fact, many times if somebody calls me and say, hey, Tom, we're looking for this, I love being honest and say, you know what? That's not exactly my brand of what I do, but I know somebody who's great at that. And having somebody that I know I can vouch for and who can vouch for me, that's huge. But there are many magicians out there as far as, you know, how many really doing what we're doing at this caliber. It doesn't seem to be something that I'm more in competition with myself. And that's what I try to focus on, is just always improving. Yeah, I love to just work with and look up to other great magicians.
That is really great, because kindness is such a big part of our business and really helping people focus and helping people do better at what they do. And I always say, when you even referring somebody, when you do that, it will come back to you tenfold, right? It is truly, you know, showing kindness and receiving that back. So talk to us a little bit about what kind of magic do you do? If anyone has never seen you do any of your magic, what is the style of show that you do? And give us a little bit of a treat about what's exciting in your show.
Sure. Well, I think number one, you're going to sense the energy. What I bring is always something unique. So any company that I work with, I am customizing what I do for their brand, for their message, and for the event that's at hand. I work a lot of times just as an MC. So what I bring just through my personality is hopefully highlighting that client. It's not really about me. And so I think what you'll sense in the show is that there's always the unexpected. You know, if you look at what people appreciate and enjoy most about magic, it's not actually the illusion or the trick itself. I could say, Angela, I'm going to make this person float in the air, and I do it, and that's amazing. But that's not really the top of the range of what people experience with really feeling that wonder and that awe. What that comes from is surprise. And what I try to do in my show is really take you down a route of the unexpected. So when you think you've seen the end of the trick, there's one more thing. When you think we've gotten to point, you know, A to B to C, there's something that you'll see at the end of the show that relates all the way back to point A. And it's really something that you're just never quite going to be fully expecting. And that, I think, is the fun of it. But there's also something that you're going to, you know, notice, and that is that the audience is really the ones who are determining the outcome. In fact, Angela, even you probably have more magical ability than you realize. When I was 9 years old. I was 9 years old, and in my school, you ever see one of these? Estimation jar?
Of course. It's a big jar of gumballs, of course.
It's like 10 Don't pounds, me, right?
Don't I, ask me I, how I many re- are in there.
Yeah, I remember this. My principal said, look, whoever gets closest without going over to the number of gumballs in here gets to win the whole jar. So right away, I'm thinking with my friends, look, if we win this, we could sell these gumballs.
Split like, it or yeah. Sell it.
Now let's split the profits, 25 cents each. Right? We were always entrepreneurial. We were thinking outside the box. Well, our principal had the exact number written down, right? A little note card. He left it in the main office right here. The thing was, I fantasized about knowing that number, and I obviously didn't know the number. I didn't even come close. I wasn't that good at this. But Angela, I bet in what you do and in your style of organization, you probably are more intuitive than you think. Could we try something?
I'm scared, but go ahead. Sure.
Look, just your gut instinct.
Yeah.
If you
were
to look at these gumballs, okay, and I told you there's the 10 pounds of them.
Yeah.
Exactly how many gumballs would you, and we didn't set this up, we didn't talk about this, correct?
No. Nope. No, we didn't. No, absolutely not. And that's not my talent. No.
Right. Just through whatever you're feeling right now, how many gumballs would you say are in that jar?
337.
Seriously, 337?
Yes.
Any reason why you went with that?
It's gut feeling.
Okay. All right. Well, look, I had no idea. Honestly, we didn't talk about it. This has been here just like my principal had it in the office the entire time. But I feel like for your viewers, your listeners, we should probably reveal it, right? Because it's, I actually I forget.
Well,
I counted these up before I came on today, but this was the other day and I honestly forget. But oh my gosh. Yeah, look at this. Look at this. There are exactly
337
gumballs in the jar. Angela, that's what I'm talking about. See, it's already within you. I just try to unlock it. So
that is amazing. And I listen, I am the worst at those type of games. I always lose. So that's interesting that you said that. But a couple of numbers came to me and then I just kind of went with my intuitive, you know, thoughts on that. So that's really, really fascinating. So okay, I want to ask you a question. We always ask the different types of questions. So let's say you're doing this with an audience member and they say, you know, something that's not the right number. And then how do you handle that?
Yeah, then we're going to go in a different direction, you know, because again, that element of surprise, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. So I have to be thinking on my toes that, okay, if we're not going to go with that number, maybe we'll make it into something else with a number that appears later on. Or, you know, you might reach into your pocket and realize the serial number on your dollar bill actually matched the number that you came up with. Or we think one thing is a mistake and later it actually proves to be something that we use in a different way. And that's really how life is. And that's part of the message and what we're kind of preaching here. It's being able to take what life throws at you and work with it and make it something that you can use, even if it's not perfect. And not every show is meant to be perfect.
And you just did something really interesting because I can see where if someone had guessed that and they had been right, their confidence level is just boosted 150%, right? Because you're actually, they're actually feeling pretty good about themselves, you know, if they are able to do that and you're giving that back. So talk to us a little bit about what you do with corporations, because you also speak to corporate events and things like that, right? So do you do more like team building events or how do you, you know, bring the magician side of it into that type of an event?
Yeah, thank you. I do a little of all of that, but two main keynotes that I'm launching this fall are really about the culture that we create, right? So creating an elite culture within our groups, and that can be just leading from wherever you are with whatever group you're in. The other thing that I talk a lot about is really sales, because whatever field you're in, we're always selling something. And that doesn't necessarily mean a product. It just means the way that I walk in a room, I'm selling you on who I am and what my belief system is. And, you know, I always feel that, you know, titles are based on image, right? Which fades away, but value is based on a belief system. And is that belief system, you know, congruent through everything in our lives? And are we able to portray that in what we do and share that with others? That, again, that's sales. That's making others. You want to cultivate a powerful team. You want to cultivate great people around you, and they're going to be attracted to you or not. I mean, look at our workforce right now. It is harder and harder for employers to attract the employee that they really have to sell why their company is great or their organization is great. So my background besides magic is really in teaching. I'm also a public school teacher, a sixth grade English
teacher. You know, I was going to ask you that question because I said you have a really wonderful way of explaining something. So I wondered if you were in the education system.
Yes. That is my background. 20 years in teaching and I have my administrative degree. So when I really construct a routine, it's just like a lesson plan. And you're always in sales. You know, we can give information to students, but that doesn't mean they're going to want to absorb it. And more importantly, they're not going to be able to, you know, creatively and constructively problem solve. And that is that is really where education is now, is giving kids the tools, not just the information, but the tools to problem solve. And when we go out there and when I perform, I'm also showing my audience that the best way to have any job is to solve problems while helping other people and having fun. And so that's what I get to do in both sides of my life. And that is really what my talks are about, my keynotes are about, which incorporate magic and the use of a magic trick or an illusion or even mind reading is showing and hitting home that point of, you know, that anything is possible. And here's how we do it. And here's something that you can hopefully take with you to really remember it by and implement that within your organization.
I love that. A couple of questions that are just kind of off the cuff here, but I'm more curious than anything. So in today's world, we've got this education system of students who don't want to go to school or they don't want to go to college, right? What do you say is in working in education, how do you get kids like that to, for number one, focus on what they want to do in life and how to do it? You know, if they don't want to go to college or if they want to do, what advice do you have for that new generation coming up?
It's a great question. I think my job as a teacher, first of all, is to show students, again, sales, right? Is to show them that I'm happy with my life. I'm happy with who I am, and I followed my path. You know, there's the old adage that, you know, those who can do, those who can't teach. And when I looked at it when I was younger, and I share this with my students, the things that really got me passionate, the things that I loved and that I was good at, I had to kind of narrow that down, and I still haven't figured out what I want to do, right? But I get to exercise all of my passions and my talents through teaching, through speaking, through magic. And so I've just followed that fire. You know, that's follow the fire. Where's the passion? And if that in 2 years leads me to something else, great. I think the old idea of us, you know, becoming something and having one job, I think that is antiquated. That's, we're going to have 7 or 8, not just different roles or jobs, but literally careers in our lives as we move forward. So, you know, having students be able to find that passion is really what it's about. Not pass a test, not just, you know, what do you want to become? But if they can use me, number one, as a role model and a catalyst for finding their passion, I think that at least sets them out thinking, hey, maybe it's college, maybe it's something else, but I don't ever want to give them one route. I want to show them there's many ways to solve a problem and to get to where you want to go. And that's going to change. That's going to change throughout your life. So of course, we want to give our students as many advantages as possible. And I think college is going to do that. But it's allowing them to tap into maybe something that nobody saw in them before. And so again, as a teacher, being vulnerable, always providing a surprise. If a kid can come to school and be excited to learn and wonder what's going to happen next and be intrigued in what I'm giving them, then it's not about me. It's about unlocking what's in them. And that's really, that's what magic is about.
That is amazing. You know, because we always say, once you're focused and organized and you get the calmness in your life, you can be brilliant, right? And there's so many kids that just need that little boost of confidence. So I think that's a great answer. And because look at you, you've been in the education field and now you're also a magician. You're well-known, you're a speaker, you do all of these different things. So you're right, I'm the same. You know, I have 3 businesses. Did I know I was gonna do that when I graduated from college? No, but do I love what I do? Yes, and that's the most important thing. So did your parents always want you to be a magician, or did they encourage that? Because, you know, that's a little, it's kind of along the route of comedian, actor, you know, there's the stable income. So what was that support system from your parents, or was it the other way?
Yeah, my parents are the best. You know, I wanted to become a surgeon and they insisted that I really became a magician. They have always supported me and my sisters, and my parents are the 2 most influential people in my lives. And my dad was a principal. My mom raised us. She is still a music teacher in nursery schools, probably the most creative person I've ever met. My parents always showed me that what I said before, that there are many ways to do something and to solve a problem. So they were my best supporters when I was starting with magic. Obviously, I followed in their footsteps in education, but it's always developing. So yeah, my parents have just been fantastic. Ironically enough, my mom's brother, his name was Lou Albano, and he went by the stage name Captain Lou Albano in the WWF at the time, the World Wrestling Federation. And he was on the biggest stages and the biggest rings, WrestleMania. He and Cyndi Lauper did a whole thing in the 80s. And so we had kind of in our family this, we're very close to showbiz. And because of that, because of the life he lived, although he was very successful, you know, my mom especially always kind of wanted to steer us away from that. She saw a lot of the pitfalls of show business, but at the same time, it was ingrained in us. I mean, it's kind of who we are. We're all performers. So to be able to have, I guess, both the direction and stability in a way in my life, but have this creative outlet, that's everything. I knew from a very young age, I could not work in a cubicle. I could not work just, you know, for a boss in a building. And being a teacher, it's almost as if I'm my own boss, because I can really create, you know, the things that I want to create with my students. And that creative element is everything that drives my magic and my teaching. So yeah, my parents were at the core of that for sure.
I love that. I was going to ask you, who inspires you? And would that be your parents?
Absolutely. My parents, my wife. My wife has reinvented herself so many times. And, you know, that fear, I think one thing that the trap I fall into, and I think many of us do, is we call it the golden handcuffs. You know, at the one hand, I have this very safe, secure, pension funded government, job as a teacher.
Yeah.
And that makes you want to stay in that lane and just, you know, be focused in that regard. But I have these people in my life, my family on the front lines, who show me that you can always change that. You can always change that course. And when you're passionate about something, you know, you'll find a way. And so that I've been learning even later in my life now, that that's something that I can always keep changing. My agent that I work with, Bill Herz with Magic Corp Productions, he's somebody who has always brought that element of business with fun, and his faith in me, that's meant the world in being able to continue to pursue more of the corporate, you know, performance piece than anything else, because that has really flourished more in the past 3 to 4 years than ever in the past.
It's almost as if a person in their life needs a team, right? Of supportive people around them. And when they do that, you know, really they can soar. And, you know, one of the questions that we get asked, a lot of people will write to us and say, ask this question. One of the questions was, have you experienced failure? And if so, how did you get through it?
Totally. Well, I've experienced failure so many times. The lesson that goes terribly wrong, the job that you didn't get. Two instances that come up for me, which really led to where I am. I think it's about trusting, you know, in what's meant to be for you, and trusting in just your ability to keep pushing forward. Is when I first began teaching, I was in a district that I thought was it for me. It was a great district. I was doing everything right. I loved it. I had to leave replacement for a teacher who had a baby, and I wound up not getting the job. And I just thought, you know, this is where, why did I even go into teaching? That rejection, that, you know, everything that I thought I was on the path for was taken away. It may not seem like a big deal when you hear it, but at the time, you know, everything in my life seemed to be falling into place. And then everything was like, this isn't going to happen at all. And I wound up landing, through just wonderful people believing in me again, in the district that I'm in now. And what I didn't see at the time is that was going to lead to so many other things, from my administrative degree to being able to pursue this career as a magician at the same time, right down to meeting my wife, who wound up, you know, being a teacher in the same school that I was as a substitute, and then us getting married, and just kind of seeing that unfold. So that's a failure that turned into a success. But another failure that relates, I think, a little bit more to what you do is when I had our second daughter, Eleanor, I wound up coming down with Lyme disease. And this was at a time when I was growing my magic business. I was, you know, really cranking with teaching. Everything was going well. And cognitively, it completely wreaked havoc on my body and my mind. I couldn't complete sentences. I was just, couldn't focus on anything, couldn't complete an email. I wound up taking a leave of absence from my work for a few months. And it just became something that I still struggle with today, but it's given, because it's an invisible crutch that nobody sees, but I know it's here. And so it's just a cross that I've been able to bear through the help of my family and my friends and those I work with, to try to push through something that is constantly there. And it reminds me that we're all vulnerable. It reminds me that I do need others. And it reminds me that it can be taken away like that, where you have to just appreciate the here and now, work as hard as you can, and push through those challenges that come your way, because they're going to come. And that's been a real setback in my life, but it's also been a real blessing, because it's allowed me to become stronger and more aware of appreciating the moments that we do have.
Yeah. You know, you said something that was so interesting when you said, when we talk about failure, when people think of the education system, you know, they think, oh, teachers, they get the summers off, you know, they, you know, it's a stable job, they, you know, have it year to year, but actually there's failure with that. So not even failure, but just the uncertainty, I think, is a better word, right, of that industry. And so that's really an eye-opener, I think, for a lot of people that realize that teachers go through the same thing, right? Getting their contract renewed, right? Or going into a new school system. How's that going to be? It's just like another job, but people have this image of, oh, if you teach, you get summers off, you get to do this, you know, you don't work a full long day, but teachers are the hardest working people I know. About that, I do want to ask you, because, you know, right now we're going through a shortage of teachers. As you focus when you are teaching, what makes a good teacher?
Wow. Well, I think what makes a good teacher is, you, number one, you have to love kids. That's just number one. You know, there's all kinds of Gallup polls and determining factors and committees and how we hire somebody and looking at somebody's resume. But, you know, the number one thing my dad always looked for and that I look for is, do you love kids? And that you can't replace, you can't teach. Number two, you have to have a passion for teaching, not necessarily just the command over the subject matter, because I've taught everything from first grade to seventh grade to fourth grade. You know, that will come. But if you have that passion for kids and you know how to relate to them, again, that comes through vulnerability, energy, and just a true love of what you're doing, then the rest will follow. But unfortunately, I think those teachers that we look back in our own lives that failed us, probably it was that element that was missing. Or maybe they didn't know it at the time, but it's something that maybe they lost a little bit of their love just for kids, let alone the subject. So that to me is number one. You have to love kids. You have to have that fire.
Yeah, I love that. I've said this before on the show. It's been some time ago, but I have such a great admiration of what teachers do. And the reason for that is because a special teacher in my life, when I was 16 years old, I lost our 10-year-old little sister. And I was very close with her. And it was in the summer. So it was on my birthday. It was a really difficult time. She passed away of a liver disease. But I remember sitting in a classroom and my journalism teacher, it was the first hour, and she could see tears were coming, but they weren't there yet. And I was just really struggling. And she gave me a note and passed the note to me and said, can you take this down the hall? And she wrote, I opened it and I still have it. And she said, take this time and take this hour if you need to go and get and talk with someone, or if you just need to take a walk and I tell you what, that helped me so much. And I always, she's still on my Facebook with me. She's, really an empowering person in my life that made a difference, because it was just that person to show kindness. Right. And I think that's so important. It. Yeah.
And I'm sure that she shared about her life as well, which a lot of teachers and performers are afraid to do. It's again, if you can open up and show them who you are, then you realize, wow, this is a person with struggles and difficulties and joys and all of these things, just like me. And when kids can see that and relate to that, or your audience sees and relates to that, that's everything. Again, it's the word that I start my year with, and it's really permeates throughout my shows, and that's vulnerability.
I love that.
And taking that interest in kids.
I love that. So going back to your magic for a second. So when you get people on stage, do you bring them on or do you go out in the audience?
Oh, well, yeah, both. I mean, the show is, I always say the decisions that the audience makes is going to determine the way the show goes. And literally no show that I do is the same. So you can go home and think, well, if I made that different decision, if I didn't say 337, what would have happened? Right. And that is every twist and turn of the show. And that's what I want you thinking. And if you come back and see me, it's going to be different material, but you're also going to see things that just happen in a different way. So that is through the audience being on stage with me going into the audience. One thing I promise is there is never any setup. So just what we did together in a live show or in an online show, we've done so many virtual shows throughout the pandemic. Nothing is prearranged. Everything is happening as you see it. And the person who is helping me is just as amazed, if not more, as what the audience is seeing. And I think that's what really makes it fun and genuine, which you have to be.
I love that. I want to ask about your personal life too. So when you go home and maybe it's at the evening or start of the day, and I think you said you had children, right?
I do. Three girls. Yes.
Three. Okay. What ages?
They're 14, 8, and 5.
Okay. You're busy. All right. So when, and you've got to have some passion, because there's drama with girls coming, I'm telling you. So, but tell us, let's say, the house might be a wreck, your wife might not be feeling well, the kids are, kind of everywhere, and you've got stuff to do and you've got to focus. How do you like tame that? How do you focus that at home, that you can give any advice for anyone that goes through that?
Yeah, I think it's sometimes hard to decompartmentalize the different roles that we play, because we all do, right? Whether you're a lawyer or you're a teacher or a performer. So what I try to do is have my family, first of all, be as much of a part of what I do as possible. The beauty is they get to come on the road with me a lot, especially in the summers and the things that I'm doing. So I incorporate them in what I do, and I incorporate them as part of my story and what I'm sharing with my audience. It's hard to work on material just like a writer. If you're not experiencing it, if you don't know about it, it's hard to write about it. So I really put who I am into my work, but I never want my work to take precedent over my family. And the most difficult thing at times is saying no. I was offered a assistant principal position years ago, and I said no, because I knew the path I wanted to stay on. I knew my passion was in the classroom. I had been offered, gigs in other countries and for months at a time on cruise ships that I had to say no to, that would have felt great, to share with others and show everybody on social media that I was doing. But one thing that I was really able to learn from other magicians and friends is that life goes by very quickly. And if you constantly just chase the dream without having the balance of building your family, it won't be there at the end, you know. And you can always do a show, but you can't redo a family. You can't remake games that you missed. And some of them I do miss. That my wife is so understanding. She is so wonderful. She's the glue that holds our family together and helps me to do what I do. But I have to be a father first. That is a priority. And if that makes me at times have a little bit, you know, fewer dates or something that I have to say no to, I do that with passion, not with disdain. I'm happy because I know that I am first a father. So that, yeah, it's not easy, but it's something that you have to make as a commitment. It's like, how do you stay motivated? You don't wake up motivated. I don't wake up focused. And with the Lyme disease, with the Lyme disease I've had, that's been something that I have to put one foot in front of the other and tell myself, you have to do this because it's a habit, not because it's something that you feel that you're motivated to do or that you want to just be focused. I have to train myself to remain focused. That has to do with lists and prioritizing and, you know, winning, what's important now, putting that first and cutting that to-do list in half because too many things, just nothing gets done. So that sense of priority and just making habits that allow me to win and prioritize, that's what I have to do to be a present father and a present husband. And I'm not always 100% successful at it, but I'm always working on it.
So great. It's always a work in process for all of us, you know. And I said I had I have two last questions. One, since you did have the Lyme disease, you know, people that I've talked to in the past, when they're trying to get focused for a meeting or if they're writing a film, a script, whatever, they're trying to take notes and it comes, right? And so you've got to write it down. How do you do that? Do you make a list at night or do you write as it happens during the day? Or how do you kind of keep notes organized in your mind and on paper?
Well, the first thing is the night before, I generally try to set up my goals for the next day, my priorities, and I look at my calendar. So I know when I go to sleep, I feel like, I don't know if this is scientific or not, but I feel like my brain is now preparing for what's to come tomorrow. And it gives me both the sense of closure of that day, but it also is preparing me, you know, to wake up feeling successful, knowing what I have in front of me first. So, you know, the book Miracle Morning and different things that I've read, you know, starting your day right is really important. Another thing that I don't do as far as note-taking is involved is I try not to jump into emails or any kind of tasks on the computer or the phone first thing. I like to review that list. I like to make notes and center myself for what I have to do during the day. And then by around 8 or 9 o'clock later on, then I set that time to check email. And that's the time, because if you just keep checking what's coming in at you, you put out fires all day long and I'm not proactively taking care of what I need to do. So I'd rather compartmentalize that. And I think it was in the 4-hour work week. Tim Ferriss,
exactly. I read the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tim Ferriss talks about, you know, 9 o'clock or 12 o'clock, this is email. And then 4 o'clock and you feel like people are going to be, hey, why isn't he responding? But they will actually respect you more when they know this is the time frame. He's going to get back to me. He's always going to be timely. But if you're just scrolling and pinging and responding, you're never actually accomplishing.
And your day's gone. That's it. Your day is gone.
Yeah.
So one last question. I could talk to you all day and I can't wait to see one of your shows as well live. When you get in your car or you're driving or you're on the train or you're going somewhere and you're just not there. It's just not one of those days, but you've got to have game on and you've got to be ready. What is the music or the song or the artist that gets you going that gives you game on?
You know, so many artists have come and gone in my times when I've gotten pumped up and this worked. The one that just kind of remains a constant since sixth grade, probably maybe eighth grade, Dave Matthews Band. I got to be honest. And the song that I, you know, it's probably the most cliche song. I love every Dave Matthews song, but Ants Marching. You know, if you put on a live version of Ants Marching, it is a carpe diem song of all carpe diem songs. And it just reminds me to not be those little ants marching and to, you know, to have life pass you by and to just be going through the motions, but to actually seize the day, make the most of the moment, because before you know it, it is, you know, lights up and lights down and we die. So we have to be cognizant of that. And just that beat every time it gets me. So Dave Matthews all the way. That's my song. That's my jam. We are bacon, sheep, and we are private, sir.
I love that. I love that. So thank you so much, Tom, for being here today. Like I said, I think you're fantastic. I love your energy. I think I could, I would love to, you know, even go see your shows on live and on video. So check him out. Tell us where they can find you.
Yeah, please. Best place is, you know, Instagram. Follow me at Tom Pesce. It's Pesce like fish, P-E-S-C-E, at Tom Pesce Magic. That's me online, Facebook and Instagram, and TomPesce.com. That's my website. You can find out about dates when I tour. You can, you know, look at all my corporate events. So cruise ships, that kind of thing. So would love to connect. And if there's anything I can help others with, whether it's virtual or in person, would love to do that and speak with your audience. So Angela, thank you so much.
That sounds fantastic. Definitely. And we will put links on our show notes so that they can find you there as well. So thank you again. We graciously appreciate you taking the time to be on our show.
Thank you. Such a blast.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Refocus Careers. If you're looking for a career coach to get you back on track, check us out at refocuscareers.com. We offer a three-step methodology that's going to help you evaluate where you're at, what you want to do, help you with your resume, and give you a plan to get you on your way. No matter what you do in life, don't forget to stop, take a moment, and refocus.